Welcome to a Juno Afternoon on Monday, December 15th, 2014. I'm your host, Scott Burton. On today's show, we'll find out about the African Library Project with guest Susan Hickey. Marion Call will be here with a preview of her concerts this week. We'll learn about the Juno Construction Academy's Wednesday information session. And we'll talk with Kyle Farley Robinson about his Tuesday piano concert. Plus, National Native News, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music, and more right here on a Juno Afternoon.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A long-awaited final report was released Friday into the death of an Aboriginal man in a Winnipeg emergency room 6 years ago. Brian Sinclair died of a treatable infection while staff at the hospital ignored him for 34 hours. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, the inquest judge said Sinclair did not have to die, but he would not rule the death a homicide.
Brian Sinclair, a 45-year-old double amputee, went to the emergency room in September of 2008. He had a blocked catheter. Video showed him wheeling himself to the triage desk where he spoke to an aide before then wheeling himself to the waiting room. He remained there for hours, slowly dying. He was never registered as a patient or seen by a nurse or even asked if he was waiting for medical care. An inquest into his death began 18 months ago. The chief medical officer said Sinclair's death could have been prevented, but called it natural, not a homicide. Manitoba's Health Minister, Sharon Blady, apologized to Sinclair's family.
I want to apologize to Mr. Sinclair's family. None of what we can do can make up for your loss.
But Sinclair's family has called the report into his death disappointing. They welcomed recommendations for better training for vulnerable people in emergency care, but Brian's cousin Robert Sinclair says the report doesn't speak to why Brian was left for so long. Negative stereotyping.
We haven't gotten the truth. I'm still waiting for that. But I think that's the most important thing. Once we get that, then we can actually say Brian didn't die in vain.
Critics such as the Aboriginal Legal Services of Toronto agree that the inquest missed the opportunity to look at the obstacles Aboriginal people across the country face every day. They say the root cause to those barriers remains discrimination within the healthcare system. The Manitoba government has not ruled out a public inquiry. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
Friday, we told you about a fisherman in southwest Alaska who was surprised to hook a silver salmon this late in the year. Now another person has reported catching salmon. KYUK's Charles Enoch reports.
Akiak's Mike Williams Sr. went to check his whitefish net on Tuesday, expecting lush and pike for his dog team.
We caught a small king and a silver. King was in pretty good shape, a little rough on the fins, but it was in a good shape. But the silver was a little darker because I think it's been in the water for quite a while.
The majority of king salmon are known to run early in the summer around June, and silver salmon are the last to start their run in August. Williams says he wasn't that surprised with the catch, saying people have been catching chum salmon in their blackfish traps. Last year he caught a fresh 33-pound king salmon in December. He says it was so fresh that they held a small feast.
It was unheard of in my 50, 60 years.
John Phillip, an elder from Akiak, also says he hasn't heard of anyone catching king salmon in the winter.
I have never heard of anything like this. But this day and age, we have the ability to share news almost instantly, so I can't say for sure if it's unusual. Though if this sort of thing happened way back in the day, the shamans in those areas would probably feel that another shaman had bested them with something unnatural.
Fish and wildlife biologist Lewis Coggan says he doesn't want to attribute this to global warming, noting there could be any number of factors that made the salmon run later than usual. In Bethel, I'm Charles Enoch.
A Navajo delegation says it has successfully repatriated sacred items from a Paris auction. 7 masks were purchased today. The delegation, which includes Navajo Nation Vice President Rex Legem, authenticated the items on Friday, which are believed to be from the early 1900s. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation. with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
The Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce's Convention and Tourism Department welcomed to Albuquerque the Tribal Telecom May 4th, weaving pathways across the digital divide. Information on services and Tribal Telecom 2015 at 8hcnm.org.
Science, technology, engineering, and math students thrive at New Mexico Tech. Personalized instruction, rigorous curriculum, undergrad research opportunities. New Mexico Tech, where the smart kids go. Info in Winds of Change magazine or visit nmt.edu. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
You're listening to a Juno afternoon here on Monday, December 15th, 2014. Scott Burton, your host, and now in the studio with me is Susan Hickey. Hi, Susan.
Hi.
Thanks for coming down today.
Hey.
So a lot of folks, I think, would know you as the owner of Hearthside Books for many years.
Yes. Debbie Reifenstein and I ran it for 30. We started it and ran it for 38 years. And in June, the new owner, Brenda Weaver, took over. So those two stores are still there.
Yeah. 38 years. That's quite a career in books.
Yeah. Debbie and I were both teachers in Juneau and just kind of took this side road, and we thought we'd do it for like a year, but we had so much fun with it that we just kept going.
Well, we are here to talk about the African Library Project, but I want to stick with this for just a second.
Sure.
What were some highlights in 38 years of owning a bookstore for you?
Oh my gosh. Besides meeting most of Juno on the other side of the counter, who supported the stores for all those years, and thank you, Juno, and thank you for continuing to step up to the counter in Juno and support Brenda in keeping those stores open. I think James Michener, when he came out with his book Alaska, he kicked off that book at our store downtown, and he came to town for a couple of days, and getting to know James Michener and his lovely wife, That was one of the highlights. He was just a lovely person.
Was he?
Yes.
All right. And so at some point, you then got involved with the African Library Project. Tell us about how that happened.
Well, thanks to Downtown Juno Rotary, they had invited me to talk about books for Christmas, and I just finished a book about libraries in Africa, and the website was listed in the back of the book, and I looked it up, and I started talking about it. I said, someday I'll look into this. And Sharon Gateman, who was president at the time, stood up and said, I want you to do it now. How much money do you need? And I said, I'm not sure. But anyway, thanks to Juno Rotary for supporting this all these years. We've now sent 8 libraries collected through Hearthside Books. And I'm retired, but Downtown Juno Rotary called Brenda Weaver, the new owner, and said, could you do another library? And so Brenda called me because she has her hands full right now. And so I'm collecting books for the African Library Project. Again, this will be the 9th library sent out of Juno. Excuse me. One library is 1,000 books, and they're gently used and new children's books, and they are sent to English-speaking countries in Africa. The villages have to apply for a library and be trained on how to take care of it. They have to provide a dry, locked place, and we collect the books for them.
Okay, and aside from your presentation that you gave, didn't you also go to Africa?
Yes, my husband and I were lucky enough to go on a photo expedition to Africa in 2008, I believe. And I'd never been to Africa before. We went to sub-Saharan Africa. And for those of you who haven't looked at a map lately, the enormity of that continent really hits you when you're there. It's 2.5 times the size of our lower 48.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a big place. So we were just in a little part of it.
And thinking about the African Library Project as a whole, it's sort of an international program or nationally based in the States?
Well, it was started by Chris Bradshaw, one woman who went on a family trip to Lesotho, I believe, and came home, and she and her friends decided to send children's books back to Africa, because once you go and you see, there are no books in many of the villages at all. There's a dirt floor, concrete building, a teacher with a piece of chalk and a blackboard frequently is what education's all about. So like many of us, we sent packages back to Africa, and once they get through customs, the books are kind of gone. They never make it to the village that you want it to go to. So Chris organized this, and I really urge you, if you're interested at all, there's an excellent website that was done all by volunteers, African Library Project. You can just Google it, or ALP, and she does this out of her house. It's a very low-budget thing, but she's now placed over 1 million books in sub-Saharan Africa. She sent one to Ghana, but it didn't work out real well, and so she's stuck to the countries in the southern part of the continent.
I suspect it sort of speaks for itself, Susan, but what about this program resonated with you and what got you sort of involved?
Oh, gosh, lots of things. Well, obviously literacy has been high on my list my entire life. I was a teacher before I got involved in Hearthside Books, and wanting to share that with kids who have never held a book is pretty powerful. Also, you know, emerging democracies around the world need educated citizens for that to grow. And a lot of our libraries have gone to countries where the entire population of parents has been wiped out by AIDS. And so there are children being raised by grandparents who have never learned a written language. So the grandparents are now learning, too. So it's an added benefit.
I see. So if folks wanted to get on board with this, how can local Junoites participate?
Okay. Well, drop off books. There's a big orange cardboard box at the front of the store, both Hearthside bookstores. One's downtown on Front and Franklin, one's at Nugget Mall. You can bring in your gently used and new children's books. And, you know, if you no longer have those books floating around anymore, you know, donations are welcome. There's a can on the counter at each store, and that money will go to buying books at cost to add to the library.
And what age sort of technically do children's books end at?
Okay, that's a good point. Our library this time is focusing on preschool through fourth grade. So no textbooks for high school, you know. But teacher resources are appreciated. Maps, posters, colorful posters showing people reading, of course, is wonderful. Games, but all the pieces need to be there, and the games need to be aimed at learning reading or math skills. But and then the Downtown Juno Rotary this year is writing a check for $1,000, $500 of which will help with the shipping from Juno down to New Orleans and then across the water over to South Africa.
Okay, and I'm trying to remember the name of, I guess I was at the Hearthside Books website where I found a summary of everything that you just said and all the books that they're looking for. So
yeah,
you can go
great.
Check that out.
So four of the libraries have gone to Malawi, which is the poorest country on the continent, one to Ghana, one to Botswana, and two to Swaziland. And this year, we know the name of the village. There's about 30 letters in it, and I won't begin to pronounce it. But this year's library will be going to Swaziland also.
And you may have already mentioned this, but do these go to actual physical libraries, or are the books then distributed to teachers? How's that work?
Well, each village, if there is a school building, mm-hmm. The books generally go into the school. It makes sense.
Sure.
If there is no school building, then often a concrete building that can be locked, is dry, is where the library goes. And Chris Bradshaw goes over there at least once a year, and she visits these. And the people in Africa, there's a long list of villages who would love to have a library. And so these 1,000 books, they're like a seed library for a village, and then hopefully more books will come later.
It's amazing how much good can come from books. I found a small library once in Mexico, and people had donated books there, and before you knew it, it became a cultural center, and people
yes.
started having
yes.
classes there.
Yes.
And
it becomes a real center of the village, mm-hmm. and I don't know if we have time, but Chris told me real quickly a short story, and I asked her once when I was down visiting her in California what was one of the most unusual things she had run into at the beginning of this, and she said she went to a village, and the chief of the village was realized the importance of these books on some level, and he kept it locked up, and he thought the books were so valuable he didn't want anybody to touch them. So Chris had to sit with him for hours and try to get him to understand the concept of people borrowing a book and bringing it back, and he was too worried they were going to go away. So she finally, she said, had to threaten that she would take the library away, you know. And of course, then he opened the door. But I said, "What would you have done if you would have said okay?" And she said, "Oh, I don't know."
How long are you all collecting books for this session?
Well, we need to have the books in New Orleans for the shipping container no later than March 15th. So the books go book rate, or medium mail now, it's called, through the post office from Juneau to New Orleans. So we would ask everyone, our target date is like mid-February at the latest to get the books in so we can get them packaged up and shipped.
All right, and for more information, go to hearthsidebooks.com.
Yes.
Susan Hickey, thanks for your time today.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. Anything else you'd like to add?
Happy holidays to everybody, and keep reading. I heard a funny little thing the other day. I'd like to make a bumper sticker that would say, I know you know how to read, but do you?
Thanks, Susan.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Had a good time, sweetheart, that's for sure. Wanna thank you for all your trouble, but if you lose my number now, I won't complain, 'cause you're my avocado baby. Said you're my avocado baby. I said you're only good for one day. Oh, I said you're my sushi baby. That's right, that's you. You're my sushi baby. Oh yeah, you're only good for one day. And I said, ooh, now, boy, better keep what you took. Boy, you better keep what you took. Oh, I said, ooh, now, boy, better eat what you cook. Boy, you better eat what you cook. Hey. Had a good run, sweetheart, that's for sure. Wanna thank you for all your hustle, but tomorrow I'll be 500 miles away, 'cause you're my faux fur baby. I said you're my faux fur baby. Oh yeah, you're nice and soft and not worth a dime. Oh, I said you're my MTV baby. Yeah, you're my reality show baby. Oh, yeah, you're cheap and noisy and probably lying. And I said, ooh, now, boy, better keep what you took. Boy, better keep what I said. Ooh, boy, now, boy, better eat what you cook. Boy, you better eat what you cook. Scarfar complained that. Had a good time, dollface, that's for sure. Wanna thank you for that extra beer, but you can stalk me online or at the show. Boy, you can call and text and call, I won't be home, because I think I do it better on my own. I'm sending you my new high heels, baby. Avocado baby.
You're my avocado baby.
That's good. That's nice and loud. That's nice and loud and rowdy, but I need you to be sexy. Sexy. You're my avocado baby.
That's right, that's right. You're my avocado, baby. Tell him he knows what he did, avocado, baby. You're my avocado, baby.
Join us for the live recording of Alaska Originals featuring Marion Call. With music once described as acoustic joy jazz, Marion will play a two-part concert including original favorites and a special set of holiday music for people who are tired of holiday music. Marion will be accompanied by Laura Zahasky, and the show starts at 7 p.m. on Thursday, December 18th at 360. Tickets at ktoo.org. And you're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, December 15th, 2014. It's about 22 minutes after the hour, and with me in the studio now is Marion Call. Hi, Marion.
How's it going, Scott?
It's going great. Thanks for coming down today.
Possibly even December 15th already.
I know.
It is not right. It's not right.
It's going so fast. So fast.
Yeah.
So this is a busy week for you. Not that you haven't been really busy otherwise, but you decided to make this one pretty busy, too.
You know what? I have. I moved down to Juneau still pretty recently, just 2-3 years ago. And before that, every year in Anchorage, I would do this holiday concert. And it's a little bit of a different concert than most of the other holiday goings on in town. Mm-hmm. And it was my favorite show of the year. It was everyone else's favorite show of the year. This is the first time I'm doing it in Juneau, so I'm really excited.
So I haven't had a chance to hear these holiday songs for people who don't like traditional
most
holiday songs.
Most people haven't. Most of them are not available.
Can you give us a little hint? Tell us about them a bit.
Sure. I love Christmas, and I love Christmas music. I grew up singing classical music, so you do a lot of Christmas music when you sing in choir or sing classical mm-hmm. repertoire. And because I love Christmas music so much, I just can't stand about 80% of what you hear in this time of year. The commercial stuff and the really, oh, God. So I decided quite a while ago to present an alternative in the form of both a sort of a comedy show that also is a little bit of a chance to do some of the classical repertoire and repertoire in other languages and from other time periods that I never do. Usually I do all my own original songs, and they're kind of funky, jazzy things, but at this time of the year I get to, for once, pull out the old classical chops and sing some, like, 12th century chant and a little bit of sort of classical music and pull out some other languages and some really reverent holiday music people generally have never heard. Christmas, but also for Solstice and for Hanukkah and for Festivus and for the New Year. And then the other part of the show is really a comedy show where we all sort of have a collective laugh and a gripe about the various tropes of the holiday season. I call that the airing of grievances in the Festivus tradition, but it's really fun and really funny. So we're doing this two nights, and the first night is a little bit more for grown-ups. Not grown-ups, but there is some strong language, so I would say like teens and up. And then the Thursday night. That's Wednesday night at the Gold Town at 7, and then Thursday night here at 360.
Absolutely.
And that is going to be an all ages appropriate.
Yeah, and tickets are going fast for both, I think.
I think so, yeah. The Gold Town is about half sold out, and I know there's been quite a number of tickets sold for Thursday night as well. The last couple shows we've done have sold out, so I definitely recommend tickets in advance, and MarionCall.com has the links for the tickets.
Yeah, and then so on Thursday, It's an Alaska original show here at 360.
Yes.
And for the first hour, yeah,
taping
for television.
I know. I better put my makeup on or something.
And so for the first hour, you're going to do some perennial favorites, right?
That's right, because they're going to air that not at holiday time. So.
Yep. And then a super secret special second hour of holiday music.
That's right. That's just for the studio audience. That'll be some of the holiday songs, and it's going to be fun. It's been a very busy week for me because about a week ago I released a new record.
Number
less
six?
Than a week ago. Number eight. Something, I don't know. It depends how you count them, sort of. This is an EP. It's a live holiday EP, and it has a few of the songs that I do in my holiday rep. Only a few. There's probably about 30 songs that I pull from for the show, and this EP just has like 7 or 8 of them. And it's called Yippie-Ki-Yay. And I should warn you that the title track has exactly the sort of language you would expect from a song called Yippie-Ki-Yay. But the rest of it is all ages appropriate, and I'm pretty excited about that record being out. It's on my website.
Well, congratulations.
Busy week.
Yes, and speaking of your website, and we were talking about social media before the interview, that's been a huge part of sort of your platform and sharing your music with folks. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a little bit about what that looks like now and how it's gotten to where it is?
It changes a little bit every year, it feels like, because the internet changes a little bit every year. But I really love, I've always loved music. It's always been a part of my life, but I never was interested in doing it as a career until there was a way I could do it and live in Alaska, where I want to live, and have the life I want to have. And the internet makes that possible. So I can, you know, spend some of the year going out and doing the road warrior thing. I just got back from a big tour. But the rest of the year I can be here, and that here is exactly where I want to be, and I can arrange my shows and connect with fans. You know, we can stay up all night chatting about the latest, you know, news about video games and webcomics and, you know, TV shows and whatnot. You can stay up all night talking about Firefly and Battlestar Galactica long distance, right? And then I can come visit them, but then I get to live here, which I think before... before music sharing on the internet, you know, before people could send each other MP3s and introduce each other to musicians they'd never heard of, you really had to live in a few geographic places to have a shot at doing music. And I don't want to live there. I have much respect and love to New York, Nashville, Austin, and L.A., but I want to live here.
And speaking of living in places like that versus here and touring, I think a lot of us think of touring for musicians in sort of a romantic way, that it's this amazing, fun thing to do. We just heard a piece, I think, from Live in Europe, Avocado Song.
Yeah.
Do you remember where that one was recorded?
Yes, I think that one was recorded in a pub in London. I was standing in front of a dartboard, and the audience was crowded between some billiards tables, and it was a packed show. It was great. And in the other room, we could hear these sort of grouchy old regulars at the bar grousing about football, and it was a wonderful show.
And is it always like that? Pubs in London, amazing, fun?
No, well, and actually that day, the day that we recorded that show, my laptop had been stolen in Edinburgh that morning. It was Guy Fawkes Day. We hadn't gotten a lick of sleep because we were in a hostel in downtown Edinburgh, and my laptop was stolen, and there was this massive crowd and fireworks and noise and yelling and drunk and, you know, bottles breaking and crazy. So... you know, both of those, it's not that one day is like that and the next day is, it's not that one day is paradise and the next day is hell. It's that every day is both paradise and hell. And that's what touring is. Kind of like any other job. You can have a job you like and it can be hell at the same time, but it's the hell you choose, right? And I love touring, and sometimes I try and demystify it for people by making it a little more everyday and sharing all about it. But at the same time, it's kind of an amazing job, and I'm lucky I get to spend a little sliver of my life doing it. So it's fun.
Yeah.
A lot of floors and couches to sleep on, a lot of crappy food, but a lot of amazing food and beautiful people, too.
And how's it feel to be home?
Oh, so good. I just want to cook. I just want to cook and cook. I'm not very good at it. I just want to do it.
Yeah.
We actually just made with Alaska Robotics, I just made a new video that's on their YouTube channel, and it's a soup recipe, a singing soup recipe. So that's what I'm doing now that I'm home. Soup recipes and holiday concerts.
Sounds like fun. So I've been trying to sort of describe your music, some things that come to mind, you know, singer-songwriter, contemporary folk, Someone made that great description we've been touting, the acoustic joy jazz.
Yeah, one of my friends said that.
Yeah,
I love it.
Yeah, it's great. How would you add to that?
I would say the live show usually is pretty humorous, or it alternates between very humorous and very touching, but it's always really sincere. There's a lot of Alaska stuff in it, even if I'm playing in, you know, Louisiana or Texas or Germany, there's a lot of Alaska stuff. And I don't know, try my best to be truthful and work really hard, I suppose. And I think that whatever the musical equivalent of that is what I try to produce. Yeah.
Oh, that sounds great. And we get two chances to listen to you play live this week. Wednesday night
at 7 at the Gold Town, and Thursday night at 7 right here at K2 at 360.
And everything's available at mariancall.com.
mariancall.com. Yeah, I believe tickets for the Gold Town show are available at the Gold Town if you walk in, or my website has the link to Brown Paper Tickets to buy tickets in advance, which I do recommend. And the tickets for the event here are at k2.org, right?
Yep. Absolutely. We've chosen track number 13 on Live in Europe. Which one is this? Tell us about it.
Oh, this is called In the Black. I just wanted something a little different than what you played before, but still live. So this is one of the more sincere, heartfelt songs, acoustic, but a little bit rockin'. And it's live, and it's very, I don't know, kind of just throw your head back and sing.
And does this one reference Firefly?
It does. It references Firefly in the title, and it's inspired by some of the characters. And it's actually a sad song, but I think we need sad songs sometimes.
And if you haven't found Firefly yet, I found it recently. And my best description is...
It's a TV show.
Yeah, I think it's like Deadwood meets Star Trek.
Yeah.
And maybe Star Wars a little. It's a Western in space, kind of.
But it's so much more.
So much more. All right, Marian Call, thank you so much. See you Wednesday night at 7 at the Gold Town Knicks. See you 7 o'clock here at 360. Are we missing anything? Anything you want to add?
No, I don't think so. I have a new album out, mariancall.com. Have a listen. It is free to download or listen to. There. So this song is inspired by Firefly, and it is called In the Black.
Come home.
hear that you cry too.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon on Monday, December 15th, 2014. Scott Burton, your host. It's about 37 minutes after 3 o'clock. And now in the studio are folks from Cirque, Kate Prussing and Brandon Sorrell. Welcome you two.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, and we're here to talk about the Juno Construction Academy. So you want to start, Kate, and this is one of the things that Cirque does. You're the program coordinator for youth and adult programs, is that right?
Correct.
Yeah. So this is one of the things that Cirque does. Before we get to this Construction Academy, can you tell us a little bit about what Cirque does in the community?
Sure. So Cirque has got a lot of different programs around the whole state of Alaska, but in particular in the Juneau community, we have both adult and youth programs that are geared towards workforce development. And so we do things like prepare adults for adult education and the GED. We do GED testing down there, English as a second language classes, citizenship training. We have a program for older workers, 55 and older, that are seeking training for employment. And we also have a program for youth called JobX that works with youth ages 16 to 21 that are looking to prepare for employment and possibly finish their high school education either through GED or the high school. What else? We have free computer classes that go on down there, and those are offered on a monthly basis, plus opportunities for people to come in during open labs and learn how to use computers as well. So a lot of stuff going on in addition to the Construction Academy.
Absolutely. And the acronym CIRC is Southeast Regional Resource Center?
Southeast Regional Resource Center. Correct.
All right. And your physical location is downtown.
Correct. We're downtown, 210 Ferry Way, which is right across from Marine Park downtown.
Okay. And so I know a lot of stuff that you do happens in that actual physical location, but
right.
You also sort of connect with classes that happen throughout the community. Is that right?
Yes. We have a satellite site out at Green Park, too.
Okay.
And so, yeah, I guess I didn't mention that one. We have an after-school homework club for kids that is going on at an apartment out at Greening Park that we've kind of taken over. And during the daytime, we have adult education and English as a second language classes going on there. We've even got an ESL class going on at the university, and a lot of these Construction Academy classes will be taking place at the Career and Tech Center at the university.
Okay. A lot of stuff going on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a lot of learning available.
Yep, a lot of great partners in this community.
Brandon, so this is the Juno Construction Academy. Tell us a little bit about it.
This is. So we are basically a resource for the people here in Juno to come get some specialized training to move forward in gaining jobs either with in-town carpenters and contractors or through apprenticeship programs in the union. So basically, we just want people to come out. We want them to go through our training and seek a career that will benefit them and Juno itself.
And sort of as an orientation, if you will, and correct me if I'm wrong, this Wednesday, December 17th from 5:30 to 7, it's an information session about all of these opportunities. Is that right?
That's exactly right. We'll have representatives from these unions, from the community here in Juno, speaking about the opportunities that could come about from going through our training program. It's for anybody that's interested in gaining a little bit more skill. We have a variety of construction classes ranging from introductions of carpentry, welding, electrical, plumbing, drywall, safety trainings. So there's a variety of different trainings you can go through to gain a little bit more skill and make yourself a better applicant for these jobs that are out there. So.
And so these classes, say in carpentry, welding, or electrical work, plumbing, those are going to happen probably throughout the spring?
They are. They're starting in January and going to go through May. And they're all different times. You know, we want applicants to maybe come through and take two of the training courses or three of them, you know. So they're going to be consecutive. They won't be running simultaneously. So you can get the most out of each training.
All right. And what would you say, Kate or Brandon, what's sort of your target audience for this? Who's this going to benefit?
The idea behind it is to develop the workforce. And so anybody that has an interest in the construction trades and wants to investigate that a little bit more and see if they've got what it takes to be in that would be a great candidate for these trainings. In fact, one of the trainings is going to be an introduction to trades and construction. And so that's a real beginning level type class for somebody that really wants to see what it's more about. They probably should be 18 years of age in order to apply. Ideally, they'll have a driver's license because the trades typically require someone to be able to drive.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a requirement to take these classes to have it, but that's a good idea for an employment standpoint. They'll need to complete an application to take this. We will also have them take it's a pre-assessment test, either Work Keys or Career Ready 101 testing, and we can help them through that process and what needs to be done. And, you know, if it would have helped them to improve their skills in areas like reading or math to be more employable, that's what the Learning Connection is all about. So we've also got them covered there, too.
Yeah. And, again, there is going to be this information session the day after tomorrow, Wednesday, December 17th, from 5:30 to 7 at the actual CERC office downtown.
Correct, yep.
Is that right?
And there's going to be free pizza there.
Free pizza.
Yeah.
To learn all about these opportunities. Well, that sounds great. If somebody wants more information, where should they go?
They should send an email to brandons@cerc.org, or they could just go to junoconstructionacademy.org and look up, you know, what's going on and what times and get the application right there online if they miss this meeting on Wednesday. But we encourage anybody that's interested to please come out Wednesday night and meet the representatives for yourself and get the application process started.
Free pizza, 5:30 across mm-hmm. the street from Marine View. Are we missing anything, Kate or Brandon?
I think that's it. I really highly encourage people to come Wednesday. There's a limited amount of seats, and we want to get you to get your applications in because classes do start as early as the beginning of January, and so we want to make sure everything's all ready to go for you.
And just to put it, I bet this information session, though, is free. You don't have to sign up for it or anything. You just show up, right?
Just show up. Yep, just show up right downtown, 210 Ferry Way.
Sounds good. You too. Thank you.
Thanks
a lot.
The Writer's Almanac for Monday, it's the 15th of December, 2014. The Bill of Rights was ratified by the United States on this day in 1789, 10 amendments to the Constitution, guaranteeing the freedom of the press, the right to bear arms, freedom of religion, the right to trial by jury, and other basic rights. James Madison was one of the great proponents, and he rewrote the First Amendment, which had said the government ought not interfere with freedom of the press, and Madison scratched that out and wrote that it shall not. It's the birthday of the civil engineer Gustave Eiffel, born in Dijon, France, 1832, who built the Eiffel Tower for the World's Fair in Paris, 1889. 1,000 feet high, the tallest structure in the world at the time. He built it of metal scaffolding so that it would be more stable, so the wind could blow right through it. And in 1999, Paris was hit by a windstorm, knocked down more than 100,000 trees. The Eiffel Tower only swayed 9 centimeters. Many people at the time thought the Eiffel Tower was very ugly, but they are all dead, and the tower still stands. It's the birthday of Edna O'Brien, County Clare, Ireland, 1930. She was a pharmacist living in London, 1954. She went to a lecture given by Arthur Misner on Hemingway, and Misner read out the first paragraph of Hemingway's A Farewell to Arms. She said, "I couldn't believe it, this totally uncluttered, precise, true prose, which was also very moving and lyrical." And she decided to write. Her first novel, The Country Girls, took her only 3 weeks, published 1960. The book, its 2 sequels, and 6 of her other books were all banned in Ireland. Her memoir, Country Girl, came out in 2012. And it's the birthday of the Emperor Nero, born in Antium near Rome in the year 37 A.D., who, according to legend, fiddled while Rome burned. Probably not true. There were no fiddles in Rome at the time, and he most likely wasn't even in the city. And besides, his instrument was the lyre. He was a ruthless dictator. He ordered the death of his own mother and his first wife. He didn't trust them. He became delusional late in his career, scandalized people appearing in theatrical productions. Finally, the Roman Senate condemned Nero to a slave's death, crucifixion, and he fled the city and killed himself rather than face his own execution. Here's a poem for today by Sheila Packer, Driving at Night. Up north, the dashboard lights of the family car gleam in memory. The radio plays to itself as I drive. My father plied the highways while my mother talked. She tried to hide that low lilt, that Finnish brogue. In the back seat, my sisters and I, our eyes always tied to the Big Dipper. I watch it still on summer evenings as the fireflies stream above the ditches and moths smack into the windshield and the wildlife's red eyes bore out from the dark forests. We flew by, then scattered like the last bit of starlight years before. It's like a different country. The past, we made wishes on unnamed falling stars that I've forgotten, that maybe were granted because I wished for love. Driving at Night, a poem by Sheila Packer from The Mother Tongue, published by Calyx Press, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Lumosity, introducing a 10-minute fit test to challenge memory, attention, and problem solving, to calculate baseline scores. Learn more at lumosity.com. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, keep in touch.
You're listening to A Juno Afternoon here on Monday, December 15th, 2014. Scott Burton in the studio with you. And also with me now is Kyle Farley Robinson. Kyle, welcome. Thanks for coming down today. And Mary Watson.
Thanks.
Thank you for coming down. So, Mary, you are one of Kyle's teachers.
That's right.
Yeah. And, Kyle, you are going to be giving a concert along with some fellow musicians this Tuesday?
Yep.
Tomorrow night, right?
Yeah.
At Northern Light United Church at 7:30 p.m. Kyle, will you tell us a little bit about the music that you'll be playing tomorrow night?
The first piece I'm going to play is Mozart's Sonata K333.
Okay.
It's a really fun and lighthearted piece, like most of Mozart.
Okay.
The second piece I'm going to play is Brahms' Intermezzo, Opus 118, Number 2. This piece is a lot more emotional and deep. And even though it's in a major key, it has a bit of sadness throughout the piece.
Okay. And what? Then are you going to play another one after that?
Yeah, Rachmaninoff's Prelude, Opus 23, Number 4. It's a very almost peaceful, but it has some drama in scattered throughout the piece.
Okay. And then you're going to be joined by a quartet, is that correct? Are you, the five of you are going to play together?
Yeah.
Can you tell us about the folks that you'll be playing with?
I'm going to play with the Crimson Quartet. There's Robert on first violin, Elias on second violin, Henry on viola, and James on the cello.
And have you played with these folks before?
Not in a concert.
Oh, wow, that should be exciting. Thinking back to some of the songs that you were telling me about that you're going to play on piano, how did you choose those?
My piano teachers recommended them, but I chose the ones that I liked the most, and I tried to keep a good variety.
Okay. So, let's see. You are an eighth grader at Floyd. Is that correct?
Yeah.
I have listeners, by the way, I have Kyle's resume here. I don't know how many of you had a resume in eighth grade, but Kyle does. He's a 4.0 student. He is the winner of the Floyd Dryden Middle School Talent Competition. Let's stop there for a second. Tell me what you did for the talent competition.
I played a version of the Pirates of the Caribbean theme.
On piano?
Yep.
Yep. All right. You're a youth solo competition winner for the junior division of the Juno Symphony. That's at the top of page one. Then there's page two and page three. You've been playing music for a while, huh, Kyle?
Yeah, 8 years now.
Yeah, and what is it about it that you like? What keeps you practicing probably every day, I suppose?
Yeah, I really enjoy it, and I feel like I can express a lot of emotions when I'm playing, and it brings joy to other people.
Good answer. Good answer. And do you remember how you got started?
Yeah, my mom just wanted to know if I'd like to take piano lessons, and I said yes. And here I am 8 years later.
Mary, what are some of your observations about Kyle and how he plays music?
He's a very unusual 13-year-old. He's very mature, and he's very expressive. He's has a real musical sense to his playing, which is very unusual for his age.
Mm-hmm. And let's see, beyond music, but you don't only play music. Right, Kyle, you do other fun stuff. Tell us about some of the other stuff that you do with your free time.
I play goalie on the JDIA Bantam hockey team. I like to hike, fish, and birdwatch.
Okay. So tomorrow night you'll be at Northern Light United Church, which is a great venue. I love the acoustics in there, and I love how cozy it is. Tell us a little bit about what we can expect. You gave us a rundown of which songs they're going to be. What's it going to look like in there? Who all do you think is going to come? Tell us about it.
Well, there's going to be, it's a really large room, and there's going to be a lot of seats. So I suppose there's going to be a couple people there. The piano is a really nice, large grand piano. And then the quintet, when they play, is going to be behind the piano.
No, they'll be in front.
In front of the piano.
Okay. I bet that's going to be fun. It starts at, you said, 7:30?
Yeah.
And how do you feel right now getting ready for your concert? You've done a lot of concerts in the past, it looks like to me. How do you feel getting ready for this one, Kyle?
Well, I memorized 2 out of the 4 pieces. And I feel like I've put a lot of preparation in.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm still a bit nervous. But
How do you deal with it, being nervous? Do you get to take a day off from school tomorrow? Or?
No. If I keep thinking that I've practiced a lot and that I know when I'm playing,
That helps deal with it?
Yeah.
All right. Mary, are you looking forward to tomorrow night?
Oh, yes. This is a milestone in his development. It's not an easy thing to put on a half concert, especially at this age, and to play, a good deal of it by memory. It's quite an accomplishment.
Absolutely. All right, so this is tomorrow night, 7:30. The Northern Light United Church is there in admission. It looks like it's free. But donations accepted at the door to benefit JAM, or the Juneau, Alaska Music Matters. Is that correct?
Yep.
Okay. Anyone you'd like to mention or anything else we should let our listeners know?
Maybe a little remark about JAM.
Sure.
It started, the whole idea of the program started in Venezuela. It's called El Sistema, and it started out small for poor kids, and it's really taken over the whole country. They have one of the largest music programs of any country in the world. And Lori Hagee, the music teacher at Glacier Valley, she got trained in this system, and she teaches it, and that's JAM is her organization. And so any of the donations will go to help buy instruments and promote JAM in the other schools.
Sounds like a great cause.
It is.
Kyle, anything else that you'd like to add?
No.
All right. Well, I want to thank you both for coming in today, and good luck tomorrow night.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for tuning into a Juneau Afternoon here today, Monday, December 15th, 2014. Tomorrow on a Juneau Afternoon is a holiday special called Hanukkah Lights. And this from Aware: are you looking to brighten a family's Christmas? Aware is looking for sponsors for our Sponsor a Family program. This includes purchasing gifts and food for families in need who have used Aware services within the past year. Please call Mandy J at Aware, 586-6623, if you're interested in signing up. Thank you and happy holidays.
This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. We rebroadcast on translators K276 AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creeks, K201 AM in Gustavus, K220 BT in Hoonah, and K210 AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. In Juneau, KTOO is on GCI Cable, on digital channel 871. We're also online at ktoo.org. Support for national programming on KTOO comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you.
The weather tonight: rain likely, lows around 40, southeast winds 10 to 20. Tuesday, numerous rain showers, highs around 42. Wednesday, mostly cloudy, scattered rain showers, highs around 38, southeast winds 10 to 15 miles per hour. And Thursday night, rain likely, lows around 33. Here's All Things Considered.